This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 134. Can a comic collector of 20 plus years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Well, thank you, Announcer Bot, and welcome to How I Got My Wife to Read Comics. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just as a reminder, we have a Facebook fan page. Just search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics. Go to sfpodcastnetwork.com for the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, or go to iTunes and search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, where you can leave a review.
And you can contact us through the website, Facebook, or email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Finally, you can call the voice line at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. Well, we got a lot to catch up on, so let's get started right away with Justice League Generation Lost number 14 by Winnick and Lepestre.
Was this from last week?
Yes.
Okay.
Captain Atom is thrown back into the future yet again, in this case 112 years, and it's unclear whether this is an alternate timeline to the last trip he took or just earlier in that timeline. In this case, there's this huge worldwide conflict going on, and of course the JLA is still around after 112 years, and it consists of Batman Damian Wayne, he's using the Lazarus Pit to stay alive. Red Hood Thomas Grayson, who we assume is like the grandson of Dick or something to that effect. A girl Shazam, a part cyborg creeper, the Blue Scarab, who's a descendant of Blue Beetle, a clone of Plastic Man, a new Black Canary, who's the descendant of Hawk and Dove.
And but we don't necessarily know which Hawk and Dove.
Right, yeah, it could be any Hawk and Dove. Of course, the original Martian Manhunter is still around.
Who's very old and almost see-through.
Right. They have been fighting this war for years and years and years, and they finally have been able to get the technology together to get a boom tube so that they can attack Max Lord's old moon base. And Max Lord is now dead, but the war continues with the OMAX.
Because the machine is keeping it going.
Right. And so we learn near the end of this that the event that starts all of this, Max Lord killing Wonder Woman, which frankly only makes sense because she killed him. Just returning the favor.
Yes, but I don't know. I think if you get a second chance, you should be a little nicer.
One would think. Yeah, if he's trying to do the right thing, how he's doing the right thing by killing Wonder Woman, it's unclear.
Yes.
So Captain Atom eventually destroys the OMAC project and the moon, for the most part, and the explosion throws him back to the current time. So now he has additional information that he needs to use to stop that future from happening.
Yes.
So I always enjoy the trips to the future in comic books. And
the alternate heroes,
right,
and stuff.
It's amazing there are never new heroes. That everybody just keeps reusing the old names.
Well, yeah.
There's never new heroes in these alternate timelines. Then we have Batman Zero by Williams, Blackman, and Reeder. So this is a setup for the new ongoing series for Batwoman. It's still that great Williams artwork with very frenetic and the jagged lines kind of indicating the panel change, a real emphasis on black and white and then red.
Now, I have to tell you that this sort of confused me. It took me a while to figure out that it was like two storylines, one on the top and one on the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Right, because it's a Batwoman storyline. It's also a Kate storyline. And in both cases, Bruce is surreptitiously checking her out.
And he's trying to confirm in his own mind that Kate is actually Batwoman.
Right. Right. And he confirms that and says, well, okay, she seems to be doing a decent job. But I have to complain a little bit about this because half of the book is previews, which you kind of expect out of a issue zero, but it's still $2.99.
Yeah, I looked at that too because I read the story and I was like, wait, this is supposed to be a regular comic.
Right.
Because it's $2.99.
Right. It should have been a dollar. It really should have been. I don't quite get that. And that's something that's really going on right now with DC as a whole. There's a preview for an upcoming detective issue that's already come out. And then each week they seem to be putting another preview that takes up like 10 pages. And it's the same thing. So you're basically...
And it wouldn't be bad if they put different previews in different books.
Exactly. But it's the same preview in like 12 books. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm paying $2.99 and I'm paying for the same 10 pages over and over and over. And I'm hoping this is just a temporary thing until they get over the switch over from the backup stories to getting rid of those.
I hope so, too, because I don't think it's very fair to people who buy a lot of comics.
JSA 45 by Guggenheim and Collins. And this is the aftermath of the whole battle at Monument Point. But frankly, the parallel story that's going on is a lot more interesting, where we see Alan and Jay fighting in World War II Africa. And they can't fight in Europe, of course, because of the infamous Spear of Destiny. And if you don't know what that is, at one point, I think in the 70s, the question was always, well, why didn't the heroes of the Golden Age in the 1940s, why didn't they just go over and mop up Hitler? You know, why didn't Superman just go in and get rid of him? And so the reason is that Hitler gets this arcane weapon called the Spear of Destiny that has these magical powers, and it basically says any good guy who comes into German territory is suddenly taken over by Hitler.
Right.
So they have to stay out of Europe. That's why. But they don't have to stay out of Africa, which is a point that I don't think they've ever really brought up. In all these years, like, well, there are other wars going on. Why didn't they go to Japan? Why didn't they go to all these other places?
So I have a question. I don't know if you can answer it. But you've got this Hitler in the DC universe collecting things like the Spear of Destiny. And then you have, like, the Nazis in the Indiana Jones thing, you know, getting things like the Ark of the Covenant. Mm-hmm. Did the Nazis really go and collect up mystic things to...
Supposedly. I mean, it's always been... I don't know how historically accurate this is, but supposedly Hitler was really big into arcane objects. I think it was more as a collector than I'm going to use this to fight the war.
Yes, but I don't know. Maybe I'll have to look into that. That's a little curious piece of history that...
Alan and Jay are in Africa to stop the Draken Project, and the Draken Project turns out to be this baby, and at that point, it becomes clear that to stop the project, they have to kill the baby. And Alan refuses to kill the baby. And so there's a battle between Alan and Jay. As Jay says in the current time, well, he has a ring of limitless power. I can run fast. Guess who won?
Yes.
So Jay meets Senator Egan, who was the one who chaired the House Un-American Activities Committee, which ended the life of the JSA. That's when they, in the 50s, basically retired and stepped away because the government wanted to know their true identities. And he gives Jay info on this Scythe. And Scythe is the one who destroyed Monument Point, this super terrorist, and the baby from 1940s is, in fact, Scythe.
Because Draken means Scythe in German.
And so Jay realizes that, you know, he's directly, essentially responsible for what happened in Monument Point. And so he decides to stay there until the city is fully rebuilt. And there's this whole subplot about the people going, yeah, you come in, and, you know, regular people saying, you come in and create all this damage and then you just leave.
And you wreck things and then you don't worry about building them back up again.
And so we know from the previous issue that Jay stays in Monument Point for quite a while because they eventually ask him to be mayor.
Right.
Madame Xanadu, number 29, final issue.
Now,
I'm not sure if this is because of low sales or because of the decision to move all the DC-based characters back into the DCU from Vertigo, or a combination of both. This was really a great series. I have to say was, because they put in this kind of mini-series in the middle of a regular series called Five Senses. And it took so long to get Five Senses out that I think that it kind of lost momentum as a title because of that. And of course, I think the reason they put it in there is because the main storyline was moving forward very quickly.
Yes.
And you know, they'd basically gone from the Dark Ages to the 1960s. And if you're going to tell this long, drawn-out storyline, well, you weren't going to have many more storylines to go. So they put this to kind of give a breather to the title, but unfortunately, I think it lost all momentum when that happened. So at least this issue tied up the remaining storylines, you know, that were generated both in the regular title and this other mini thing, this Five Senses thing.
Right.
And so in the end, Phantom Stranger returns again and tells Xanadu, you know, there's a new age of heroes coming, and she realizes it too. And she says, you know, I'll be here if they want help. And that's pretty much how it ends.
Right. Now, I did like this new sidekick character to mm-hmm. Madame Xanadu that they introduced. I wouldn't mind seeing both of them in some of the mainline DC comics.
Well,
I think
maybe
that would be interesting.
Well, maybe that they're bringing these characters back to DC. You'll see Madame Xanadu again. They might do some sort of magic team or something, or maybe she's used as a resource by the JLA, much in the way they use Oracle. But it is a shame. It was just gorgeous art and a wonderful storyline, and I just think it got lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
Adventure Comics number 521 from Levitz, Borges, and Alquiza. So a new Green Lantern is chosen by Diogene, who is this weird essence of the Guardians in the future. Unclear what this creature was. And so this creature brings together all the Legionnaires who are currently available on Earth and scans the various members and says, okay, this is the right one. This is who should hold the ring. And that person is Mon-El. So he actually accepts it, which actually surprises me. You know, I was like, oh no, I don't want it either. And so he ends up accepting it, which is really a major change for this character.
Mm-hmm.
It also pretty much takes that character out of the main Legion storyline. It'll be interesting to see if we continue to see that character.
Well, I'm sure that we will. Otherwise, what was the point of making him a Green Lantern?
Well, Mon-El for a long time was kind of in the way in the continuity. I mean, they had to create this whole concept called Valor during the period where they said there's only one Kryptonian, there's never been another Kryptonian, and then they ended up creating the whole Daxamite race in order to explain Mon-El. So they've had to do a lot of backflips to keep Mon-El in continuity. So this might be their way of moving him off the main storyline, and maybe we won't see him again. I don't know. Because until now, there's never been a Green Lantern in the Legion storyline. While this is all going on, there's an earthquake, and they're trying to stop this, whatever the new big baddie is, because this is going to create the next major storyline, clearly. And then there's the Atom backup story, which wasn't completed, which kind of surprised me. I expected they were kind of wrapping up all these backups. So there's now going to be a special coming out in February, which apparently will wrap up the storyline. We knew they had to get rid of the backups. It seems like that backup in particular seems to, like, wander a bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really moving forward. They could have resolved this in this issue. Then we have Action Comics Annual, number 13, by Cornell, Rudy, and Bennis. So we see two stories of young Luthor.
You know, this sort of reminded me of the Earth One story, the Superman that just came out, where, you know, he was just coming to Metropolis and finding his way.
Yeah, of course, this is all Paul Cornell's writing, and I really have enjoyed what Paul Cornell is doing. And the first of these two stories involves Manheim, the 100, and Darkseid. And this is all kind of going back to the almost like the 70s continuity, where that was the main thing going on in Superman at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out that Luthor worked on Apocalypse for some period of time, working directly for Darkseid. As always, he wants to take over, and he tries to take over. That doesn't really work out, and he has to escape from Apocalypse. And some really dramatic artwork by Rudy.
And interestingly enough, this is where Luthor and Perry White first meet and get involved.
Right.
And sets the tone for their relationship throughout the whole continuity of the Superman.
Yeah, because at the time, Perry, as a young man, is working as an undercover reporter in and partnering with Manheim. And he's trying to find out all about all this, but he's also undercover. Then we have a second story that involves Ra's al Ghul, and he wants to make Lex his apprentice. The whole thing is told in narrative. There's no actual dialogue. And Lex breaks into a father box, which is another going back to the New Gods continuity. And Ra's then kills Lex, but drops into a Lazarus pit. So I really think this issue better explains why Lex is the way he is than decades of other stories. We get the idea that he, as a young man, he saw the absolute, the most evil things, and he's just like, okay, he just assimilated that and said, okay, I can be above that and still get what I need out of these people.
Right.
Finally, we have a DC News Roundup here, where DC Comics had a big executive shuffle this past week.
Again.
But in this case, it's all people who pretty much were in their roles. It's more just like formalizing earlier decisions are already made. So Eddie Berganza is now the DCU executive editor, where that will allow Harris, who's the editor-in-chief, will now watch over all DC titles, including Vertigo. I mean, like, he'll be over and above the specific line of business editors, which kind of makes sense. Matt Idelson is now the Superman editor. Mike Martz is now the Bat editor. Ian Sattler is now the director for special projects and archives. Karen Berger stays as the Vertigo editor, which I know was a concern that whether they would let her go. I'm glad that didn't happen. Mark Chiarello is now the VP of art direction and design. And Amit Dacia is now the franchise management for DC Entertainment. He was with Warner Home Video. And there were various promotions in the operations areas. And so this, again, pretty much just formalizing earlier decisions. Also, I think Harris is bringing over some of the people who worked for him at Marvel. A couple of these people, like Mike Martz, I think, came over. I think it's just formalizing what the new pecking order is going to be in the executive floor at DC Entertainment.
Who gets the bigger office?
Exactly. All right, before we get out of here, I think it's time to play America's Fastest Growing New Game Show.
Who's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly? Are you ready, Mark?
I am.
Okay. Go.
TV related?
No.
Movie related?
No.
Book related?
No.
Music related?
Yes.
Ooh, no, not music related. I hate these. Okay.
And so you're just going to spend 2 minutes complaining about how much you hate music.
Is it one person?
Yes.
A man?
No.
It's a woman?
Yes.
Over 40?
No.
Over 30?
No.
Over 20?
Just barely.
Just barely. Disney related?
No.
Okay. Let's see. I assume, like, well, it's a pop artist. Like,
not mainly.
Okay. Country?
Yes.
Okay. Country. All right. Country artist. Is this like a Grammy issue?
No.
Oh. Let's see.
Although she might very well have been on a Grammy or a CMA or a, MTV.
The only young country artist that I can think of is Taylor Swift.
And you would be correct. Woohoo! She's the 2010 Entertainer of the Year.
Really?
Well, as voted on by Entertainment Weekly readers, I understand it.
Wow.
So, John Hamm came in second.
Oh, my goodness. All right. So, again, I want to remind you about that Facebook fan page. Search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics. Go to sfpodcastnetwork.com for the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, or go to iTunes and search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, and please leave us a review.
You can contact us through the website, Facebook, or email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com or call our voice line at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye. We'll be right back.